I'm Nina, your volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Welcome to Snippets from the Week. The Week is a magazine that summarizes current events from the past 7 days. It also includes timeless tidbits that rarely make the headlines, and that's what's up next. The topics are, it wasn't all bad, only in America, those outrageous and crazy things that could only happen here in the U.S., it must be true, I read it in the tabloids, and finally, wit and wisdom. Occasionally, I throw in a snippet about science and the arts, interesting things that we might not otherwise know about. First, from It Wasn't All Bad, when Carnegie Mellon student Nikolai Stefanov first heard about a school club that planned to send a rover to the moon, he knew nothing about spacecraft and offered to fetch coffee for the team. 3 years later, he's the mission control director responsible for ensuring the rover's success after it hitches a ride on a commercial lunar lander. If successful, Stefanov and his 300-person team will be the first private group to land a rover on an extraterrestrial body and will have beaten NASA's own robot rovers to the moon. Next, a heartwarming story about Ukrainian children. 31 Ukrainian children were reunited with their families months after they were forcibly sent to Russia and Russian-occupied Crimea. 13 mothers traveling in a group braved a complex and harrowing journey through Poland and Belarus to bring the children back in a mission coordinated by the humanitarian group Save Ukraine. Of some 19,500 Ukrainian children illegally taken to Russia, so far 360 have returned home. Many had been told by the Russians that their parents no longer wanted them. The children crossed the Russia-Belarus border on foot, then traveled by bus to Kyiv. I cried when I saw my mom from the bus, said one of the children, Bogdan, 13. We went to the summer camp for 2 weeks, but we got stuck there for 6 months. That's a heartrending story, isn't it? Next, a story about novice pilot Taylor Hash. She was taking off from a Pontiac, Michigan runway when she sent a startling message over the radio. Her front wheel had fallen off, and she'd have to perform an emergency landing. Veteran pilot Chris Yates was flying nearby and immediately began to advise the 21-year-old on only her third solo flight. My daughter's name is Taylor, and I taught her to fly, he said over the radio. With Yates' guidance, Hash circled the airport to calm her nerves and then eased her back tires onto the runway safely. This is a good start to your legacy, kid, Yates said. What a nice story. Continuing with It Wasn't All Bad, Kevin Isa was 10 and playing in the Little League All-Star Baseball game when he noticed that he was seeing double. His parents took him to the hospital, and the doctors discovered he had a brain tumor that needed immediate surgery. Philip B. Storm, his surgeon, treated him quickly, and Isa was playing again in a week. The kid and the doctor kept in touch, and 14 years later, Isa is working as a clinical research assistant for the doctor who saved his life and plans on a medical career. Storm says that he brings unique skills because, quote, he can relate to what families are going through. Next, a story about the Beatles. After 52 years, Paul McCartney has been reunited with his cherished Hofner bass guitar, stolen from a Beatles touring van in London in 1972. In 2018, a group of Beatles fans launched the Lost Bass Project, an endeavor to trace an instrument featured on the group's first two albums. Tracking over 100 leads, the group discovered that the thief sold the guitar to Ronald Guest, a London pub owner, and suspected that Guest's family still retained the ownership of the bass. In September, after the project was featured in a news article, a person in southern England reached out to McCartney's company and gave back the instrument. Despite a little bit of damage, the Hofner bass remains completely playable. Well, isn't that great? Oshkosh Cusick last month became the youngest chess player to defeat a chess grandmaster in a classical tournament game. The prodigy, at age 8 years, 6 months, and 11 days, beat Jacek Stopa, 37, in the fourth round of Switzerland's Burgdorfer Stadthaus Open, and finished 12th in the tournament. Born in India and now living in Singapore, Ashwath started playing chess when he was 4 years old, and in 2022 became the world under-8 rapid champion, a meteoric rise. In the future, he would like to become a world champion. It's surreal, as there isn't really any sports tradition in our families, said Kaushik Sriram, Ashwath's father. Next up, we have Only in America, some amazing and crazy things that could only happen in the good old U.S. of A. The National MS Society has apologized for firing a 90-year-old volunteer who was confused by colleagues' use of pronouns in email signatures. Californian Fran Itkoff had worked for the Multiple Sclerosis Charity for 60 years, but was asked to step down in January for, quote, breaching its diversity and inclusion policy, end quote. After she asked why people were adding she/her and he/his to their messages. Following public backlash, the nonprofit apologized, saying it should have had more conversations with Fran. You think? Next, a Missouri lawmaker has introduced a bill that would let pregnant women get divorced in the state. Missouri is one of four states, along with Texas, Arkansas, and Arizona, that bar judges from signing divorce papers if one party is pregnant, even if the woman is a victim of domestic violence. Democratic State Representative Ashley Ioun said the ban doesn't make sense in 2024. Continuing Only in America, we go over to Florida. A Florida high school teacher has been fired for asking students to write their own obituaries before an active shooter drill. Psychology teacher Jeffrey Keene, 63, says he told his class of 35 11th and 12th graders that the assignment isn't a way to upset you, but hoped the prospect of death would inspire reflection on how they want to move forward with their lives. I guess now Jeffrey has a chance to move forward with his life. A teenager was disqualified from a Pokemon trading card tournament in North Carolina because he giggled when asked his preferred pronouns. Makani Tran said his brief laugh was caused by pre-match jitters and that he has zero issues with people's pronouns and how they choose to identify. But a judge told Tran that his giggle caused someone to feel, quote, unsafe and uncomfortable. The next section we have snippets for you is called It Must Be True, I Read It in the Tabloids. And now we go over to England. A 48-year-old Englishman who ran out of money while partying in Thailand asked his friends to beat him up and pose as kidnappers so his family would send a ransom. Police said Ian Robbie Day had his buddies repeatedly punch him in the face to create bruises and sent videos showing them wearing masks and holding him hostage. Instead of sending money, his panicked family, wait for it, called the police, who burst into Day's hotel room. When we arrived, a police spokesman said, they were having a party. All were charged with drug possession and faced deportation. Those were some pretty sensible parents, I'd say. Next, a Bellevue, Washington man triggered a bomb squad visit when he offered to donate a 1950s rocket designed to carry nuclear warheads that he'd been keeping in his garage. After the man asked a military museum if it wanted his rusty Douglas AIR-2 Genie, its staff contacted police. The bomb squad determined that the rocket, which the man said he purchased in an estate sale, had no warhead attached and was harmless. And we think it's going to be a long, long time before we get another call like this again, the policeman quipped. Finally, a British policeman stopped an apparent thief who was running in the street with a refrigerator strapped to his back, only to find he was training to run a marathon. Is that a fridge on your back? One of the puzzled officers asked Daniel Fairbrother of Hertfordshire. Fairbrother explained that he was training to break a Guinness World Record for running a marathon while carrying an appliance on your back. And the police let him carry on. Understandably, Fairbrother said, they had not seen anything like it before. That's one strong man, I'd say. Even an empty refrigerator, right? And now, more. Yes, we have more from It Must Be True, I Read It in the Tabloids. A 3-year-old Australian boy who wanted to get a plush toy was trapped inside a shopping mall's claw machine when he climbed through its prize dispenser. The boy's father, Timothy Hopper, said his son disappeared into the dispenser in a split second, adding, "I had zero chance to react to it." Police and his parents coached the boy to get in a back corner of the machine so the cops could smash it open. When the boy was freed, an officer told him, "You won a prize. Which one do you want?" I guess that's one of those all's well that ends well stories. Next, we go to France. A Frenchman who spent 8 years building a model of the Eiffel Tower out of matchsticks was told he was disqualified for a Guinness World Record because he used the wrong matchsticks. Oh boy. Richard Plowd built the 23.6-foot model with 706,900 matchsticks, but they were missing the flammable sulfur heads. Guinness said that it violated the rules. Disappointment and incomprehension, Plod posted on his Facebook. But after further consideration, Guinness said it had been, quote, heavy-handed and awarded him the record. Well, it's kind of nice, isn't it, that even in the tabloids, sometimes reason prevails? I love it. Next, officials at a tiny AM station in Jasper, Alabama, were stunned when thieves made off with its 200-foot-tall, heavy steel radio tower. I've heard of thieves in this area stealing anything, but this one takes the cake, said longtime station manager Brett Elmore. Police are investigating, and Elmore has put up a GoFundMe page to raise the $60,000 to $100,000 needed for a new tower. You're not going to keep me down, he said. Next, we have the section entitled Wit and Wisdom. These are quotations from people, some of them famous, some of them we've never heard of, that have appeared in print somewhere or on the web. Sometimes they're enlightening and inspiring, sometimes they're funny, and usually they're witty, as the name would imply. First, guess all the happiness in the world can't buy you money. That was Toby Keith, quoted in the New York Times. I like that. It's good for us when, in spite of all the sober, pragmatic, and even correct arguments that war is sometimes necessary, someone says, war is large-scale murder, us at our worst, the stupidest guy doing the cruelest thing to the weakest human being. That was George Saunders, quoted in The Marginalian. There is nothing so absurd that some philosopher hasn't said it. That was said Cicero, by Cicero, quoted in The Jewish Voice. I'm a marvelous housekeeper. Every time I leave a man, I keep his house. That was, you might be able to guess this, Zsa Gabor, she had a lot of husbands, I think, quoted in the San Diego Jewish World. Next one, only those who will risk going too far can possibly find out how far one can go. T.S. Eliot, quoted in The Knowledge. It's a recession when your neighbor loses their job. It's a depression when you lose yours. That was good old Harry S. Truman, quoted in abcactionnews.com. If people wanted you to write warmly about them, they should have behaved better. Anne Lamott, quoted in the Huffington Post. Continuing with more wit and wisdom, I can't be a pessimist because I'm alive. To be a pessimist means that you have agreed that human life is an academic matter. That's from James Baldwin, quoted in NPR. I always used to think that we should have two lifetimes, one to try it out, and the second one to know what's coming. That came from Cheetah Rivera, quoted in People magazine. There is no such thing as keeping out of politics. All issues are political issues, and politics itself is a mass of lies, evasions, folly, hatred, and schizophrenia. George Orwell, quoted in the Duluth News Tribune. I can calculate the movement of stars, but not the madness of men. And that comes from the genius and scientist Isaac Newton, quoted in the New York Post. Whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. I bet many of you know who said that. That's a really famous quote. Comes from Henry Ford, quoted in Forbes. And it's often re-quoted and re-quoted by other people, myself included. If they want you to cook the dinner, at least they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries. That's from Bill Parcells, a very famous football coach and NFL official, quoted in Yahoo Sports. I had to think about that one for a minute, but I think it might refer to the coach being allowed to pick and choose some of his players. Hope is not like a lottery ticket you can sit on the sofa and clutch, feeling lucky. Hope is an axe you break down doors with in an emergency. And that came from Rebecca Solnit, quoted in The Nation. And now let's turn to art and the sciences for some snippets for our reading today. The headline is New Art from Pompeii, Stunning Ancient Frescoes Unearthed. The ruins of Pompeii are still giving up new secrets, said Angela Giuffrida in The Guardian. Nearly 2,000 years after the eruption of Mount Vesuvius buried the ancient Roman city in rock and ash, archaeologists have unearthed a series of remarkably preserved frescoes painted sometime between 15 BC and AD 50. Found amid the ruins of what appears to be a large villa, the frescoes adorn a banquet hall whose four walls were painted black in an apparent effort to mask the soot from boiling oil lamps. Also painted on those walls are remarkably well-preserved scenes from ancient Greek legends, including Helen of Troy meeting Paris and Apollo attempting to woo the priestess Cassandra. The so-called Black Room and its frescoes offer a glimpse of how some of the wealthier denizens lived, or at least the art they could meditate on as they munched, said Elizabeth Provoledo in the New York Times. Gabriel Zuchtriegel, director of the Archaeological Park of Pompeii, says the paintings were intended to spark conversation among banquet guests about love, fate, and more. I wonder if they painted on the frescoes that you can't talk about politics or religion. Anyway, because they were gathered after sunset, the flickering light of the lamps had the effect of making the images appear to move, he says, especially after a few glasses of good Campanian wine. The Black Room was discovered as part of a larger excavation focused on a block of urban buildings that appears to have been under reconstruction when the volcano blew. One fresco discovered in a nearby chamber last summer indicates that locals ate something that looks remarkably like pizza, that universal food that everybody loves. Another room, thought to be linked to a bakery, offers evidence that enslaved people and donkeys might have been locked up together. For now, the Black Room is closed to tourists as archaeologists continue to excavate nearby. We don't know what's there, said Zuchtriegel. That's the great part. Next, we have a science snippet. Thinking without words. We don't need language to reason. That's the conclusion of a 15-year study that may overturn a decades-old belief that cognition depends on language processing, reports the New York Times. Evelina Fedorenko, the neuroscientist who led the study, first heard the theory at MIT from linguist Noam Chomsky, who argued that language is required for thought and intrinsic to human brains. Intrigued, Fedorenko focused her research on determining exactly how the brain produces language. She had volunteers perform cognitive and linguistic tasks while researchers took ultra-detailed images of their brains. certain areas of the brain lit up during language processing tasks, such as reading, like I'm doing now. So I hope my brain is lighting up for you. But those areas did not activate when the volunteers performed cognitive tests, like solving puzzles or doing math. None of those things seemed to engage language circuits, Fedorenko says. If language is necessary for communication, but not for thinking, it may explain why some stroke sufferers who've lost the power of speech can still play chess and do algebra. And it may also shed light on why AI models based on language are good at writing, but terrible at logic. Isn't that interesting? Because AI is here to stay, and they say it does some things well and some things not so well. And here we have a study that confirms that. And now I like to end our reading of snippets from the week with returning to It Wasn't All Bad, because I find those stories uplifting and optimistic. Jorel Bolden, a 16-year-old, 6'5" Missouri boy, always struggled to find shoes for his size 23 feet, and he could only wear tight size 22 shoes. His family located on eBay. But in January, Bolden and his mother, Tamika Neal, shared his story on local TV. And after the report went viral, he was contacted by someone else with very big feet, former NBA star Shaquille O'Neal. On FaceTime, O'Neal, who wears size 22, told Bolden to check his mailbox in the coming days. Soon, the teenager found 20 pairs of suitable shoes. "It's better than Christmas morning," said Neil. "Santa didn't send this. Shaq did." Well, I can identify with that young man because growing up, I always had big feet for a teenage girl and had trouble finding shoes, especially cute shoes. So good for Shaq O'Neal helping out that young man with the big feet. Next, a heartwarming story about a donkey. After recovering from an accident, a 2-year-old donkey named Tiptoe has become a highlight of life for seniors in Minnesota community centers. Tiptoe had to be taken to an ICU after being trampled by his mother, and he spent months battling for his life. He's recovered and become a blind donkey seeing eye dog. After that animal was put to sleep, Tiptoe was adopted by Erin Larson, who made him the seeing eye guide to her blind horse. That's all the time we have for Snippets of the Week. I certainly hope you've enjoyed being inspired and perhaps entertained, and maybe you even had a chuckle or two along the way.
I'm Nina, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. And remember, if you want to listen live, you can go to sunsounds.org or have your device stream the live broadcast, and you can also listen on demand. Hello, and welcome to Snippets from the Week. I'm Nina, your volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. The Week is a magazine that summarizes current events from the past 7 days. It also includes timeless tidbits that rarely make the headlines. And so sometimes these things are surprising, entertaining, outrageous sometimes, uplifting, funny, and often quite inspirational. The topic areas are, It Wasn't All Bad, Only in America, Those Things That Could Only Happen Here in the United States, It Must Be True, I Read It in the Tabloids, and finally, Wit and Wisdom. So I look forward to sharing these with you. Occasionally, I'll throw in a snippet about science and the arts, which is always interesting, things you might not ever know about. So I invite you to relax and enjoy what comes next. First of all, from It Wasn't All Bad, we have a story about a truck that was crossing a bridge, and a woman truck driver who ran into some real difficulty. Here it is. A truck was crossing a Kentucky bridge last week when a car coming from the opposite direction crashed into it, throwing the truck over a guardrail and leaving it dangling dangerously over the Ohio River. The driver, trapped in the truck's cab, found herself suspended 100 feet above the water, with the rest of the trailer at risk of falling over her. Emergency responders set up a rescue rope, and Bryce Carden, a Louisville firefighter, rappelled down the bridge and brought her back to safety in a 40-minute rescue operation. The driver, who has not been identified, was treated for non-life-threatening injuries. Carden was the exact right person to calm the driver and let her know that she is in safe hands, said Louisville Fire Chief Brian O'Neill. Louisville, Kentucky is just over the state line from Ohio near Cincinnati, so most likely this Ohio River accident happened somewhere near Cincinnati. The next story is a very heartwarming story about a little donkey. After recovering from an accident, a 2-year-old donkey named Tiptoe has become a highlight of life for seniors in a Minnesota community center. Tiptoe had to be taken to an ICU after being trampled by his mother, and he spent months battling for his life. He recovered and became a blind donkey seeing eye guide. After that animal was put to sleep, Tiptoe was adopted by Erin Larson, who made him the seeing eye guide to her blind horse. Larson has given Tiptoe a side gig visiting senior living and memory care facilities. He survived, and now he's paying it back and giving back to all the people who have showered him with love. That's a really sweet story, isn't it? The love that we can get from animals. It's always heartwarming. More from It Wasn't All Bad. Harold Terrens, 100 years old, and his fiancée, Jean Swirlin, 96, are planning to marry this June in France, 8 decades after he first traveled to the country as a U.S. Army Air Forces corporal. Terrens arrived in Normandy 12 days after D-Day and helped transport German prisoners and recently freed Americans to England. His actions earned him several recognitions, including a medal from French President Emmanuel Macron. The couple plans to tie the knot in Normandy after Terrens is honored again by French authorities. I love this girl. She's quite special, said Terrens. And now a story about a courageous young woman who sailed literally around the world. After 30,000 miles and 130 days at sea, Cole Brower arrived last March in the Spanish port city of A Coruña, becoming the first American woman to race solo and nonstop around the world. The 29-year-old New Yorker came in second out of 16 sailors who participated in the Global Solo Challenge. After setting off from A Coruña last October, Brower sailed around the west coast of Africa, past Australia, and around South America's treacherous Cape Horn. Along the way, 30-foot waves tossed Brower around the 40-foot sailboat, injuring a rib. At one point, she had to insert herself with an IV to avoid dehydration. Brower plans to continue competing professionally. This is really cool, she said, and so overwhelming in every sense of the word. That is one tough lady, and 15 other sailors also doing the same thing around the world. That's amazing. Next, a story about a gray whale. A gray whale, a species hunted to extinction in the Atlantic Ocean more than 200 years ago, was detected 30 miles south of Nantucket last March. In the last 15 years, 5 have been spotted in Mediterranean and Atlantic waters. In December, possibly the same whale seen in Nantucket, the one was observed off the Florida coast. Climate change might be responsible for the whale sightings, opening up an ice-free path from the Pacific. My brain was trying to process what I was seeing because this animal was something that should not really exist in these waters, said New England aquarium research technician Kate Lemley. Next, we turn to the section entitled Only in America, those things that could only happen here in the good old U.S. of A. A Missouri gubernatorial candidate is dismissing claims that he's a, quote, cross-burning KKK member as misinformation. Republican Daryl McClanahan admits that recently surfaced photos do show him and a white hooded figure giving Nazi salutes before a large burning cross. But he says he was only an honorary member of the Klan, and the photos were taken at a Christian identity cross lighting ceremony, not a white supremacist cross burning. Okay, that's his interpretation, I guess. The Veterans Affairs Department has nixed a memo aimed at banning VA displays of the iconic photo that shows a sailor kissing a woman in Times Square at the end of World War II. I remember that photo. It shows a man and he's kind of has the woman in an embrace and she's kind of leaning backwards and they're both smiling really broadly. The memo said the photo depicts a non-consensual act and violates VA policy because the sailor didn't ask the woman if he could kiss her. How would they know that in a photo? How do they tell that? I just don't know. Officials later said the memo was not sanctioned and should not have been sent out. Okay. Next in Only in America, we have something that affects Arizona's college students right here. Students at Arizona's public universities may soon be able to appeal low grades if they feel they're victims of a professor's political bias. The GOP-held Senate in the state of Arizona has approved a bill that would establish a grade challenge department at each state university, which could order professors to regrade a student's work. GOP State Senator Anthony Kern, the bill's sponsor, has called Arizona's universities indoctrination camps that shut down conservative thinking. Well, we'll be interested to see if that passes. Next, an Oregon woman has been convicted of a hate crime for pushing and misgendering a trans woman in the bathroom of a Portland bar. At her trial, Cassandra McIntyre admitted telling Reese Larson that she was a man and should use the other toilet after Larson cut in line, but claimed, "I wasn't trying to misgender her." The court sentenced McIntyre to 50 hours of community service and 2 years probation. Now we're going to turn to It Must Be True, I Read It in the Tabloids. You know, when you're standing in the grocery store and you see those outrageous headlines, well, here's some of the details so you don't have to pick up the magazine and read it next time you're in Bashes. A Delta flight from Amsterdam to Detroit had to turn back 450 miles into its journey after a shower of maggots fell from an overhead bin onto a female passenger. She was freaking out, said Philip Schotte, who is seated next to her near the unlucky flyer. She was just trying to kind of fight off these maggots. Flight attendants soon found the source of the grubs, a rotting fish wrapped in newspaper that another passenger had stashed in the compartment. That's one of those what were they thinking moments, isn't it? After landing back in Amsterdam, the Delta plane was removed from service for cleaning. Good idea, don't you think? Next, a Danish man stuffed 68 matchsticks up his nose to set a world record. Surprisingly, it didn't really hurt, said Peter von Tangen Buskoff, 39 years old, adding that he was aided by fairly large nostrils and quite stretchy skin. I guess that would be helpful. Bukov could have clinched the Guinness World Record with a mere 45 matches, but found he had space for another 23. He doesn't think he can best his current record, but hasn't ruled out trying. An increase in capacity would require some training, said Buskov, or perhaps my nose will grow as I get older. Okay. As I'm getting older, I don't want my nose to grow necessarily, do you? The head of culture for the Colombian city of Medellin was forced to resign after publicly admitting he had no idea how to do his job and he had no relevant qualifications. During a talk at the University of Antioquia, Manuel Cordoba said, "I don't know what a registry is or what a library is," and that he'd only accepted the job as culture boss because he was fascinated with the idea of jumping into the unknown. Announcing his resignation, Cordoba apologized for not living up to the enormous responsibility the city had placed on him. I wonder if in the future he might try jumping into the unknown more like other people usually do, like jumping out of an airplane with a parachute or jumping off a bridge with a bungee cord. More from It Must Be True, I read it in the tabloids, and hold on to your hats, it gets even more outrageous. A Florida man who went to a Jacksonville hospital after months of worsening face pain and nosebleeds had 150 live bugs removed from his nose. There was a significant abnormality in that nose, said attending physician David Carlson, in the epitome of understatement, who found writhing insect larvae feeding on the man's sinus tissue right under the brain. It's not certain how they got there, but the patient suspects it was from handling dead fish on fishing trips. Maybe he was the one who put that fish in the overhead bin on the Delta flight. Wonder. "Before, I would rinse my hands in the river," he said. "Now I'll use cleaner." The next story is from New York City. Plastic surgeons in New York City are seeing a boom in male patients who want their nipples to be reduced in size and made to look like soccer star David Beckham's. That means small, symmetrical, and almond-shaped. Okay. "This is a thing," said Mark Everett, a plastic surgeon on Manhattan's Upper East Side. "People want David Beckham's nipples. The procedure, which involves extracting breast tissue, costs about $5,000. Patients can return to work in an hour," said the surgeon, L. Levine, who does the operation twice a month. It's definitely a growing trend. Next story is from Seattle. A contractor renovating a bathroom in Seattle made an unexpected discovery while ripping out a bathtub, an old grenade between the studs. "My first thought was to get out of there," said Vadim Karkavi, who, after catching his breath, returned for a closer look. "I zoomed in on my phone and I'm like, that's an actual freaking grenade." Police determined it wasn't live and told him it had probably been brought home by a World War II vet who stored it in there and possibly forgot about it. Oh my goodness. Now, let's enjoy some wit and wisdom. These are quotations, some of them from famous people we've heard of, others from people we may not know. "When you invent the ship, you also invent the shipwreck. When you invent the plane, you also invent the plane crash. And when you invent electricity, you invent electrocution. Every technology carries its own negativity." That might apply to AI right now, right? Philosopher Paul Virilio quoted in the Washington Post, "Speak when you are angry and you will make the best speech you will ever regret." That came from Ambrose Bierce, quoted in Time magazine. You never know what worse luck your bad luck has saved you from. I think that one should be read again. You never know what worse luck your bad luck has saved you from. Cormac McCarthy, quoted in Splice Today. Apart from painting and gardening, I'm no good at anything. Claude Monet, quoted in top10films.uk. My instinctive belief is that it is probably impossible for poor old Homo sapiens to get to the bottom of it all. That's a good one. Astrophysicist Paul Davies, quoted in Evolution News. Next, from Irma Bombeck. If you can laugh at it, you can live with it. She was quoted in the Saturday Evening Post. Seems like we should put that up on our refrigerators. If you can laugh at it, you can live with it. The most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any. And that was from Alice Walker, quoted in Good Housekeeping. Alice Walker is a novelist and short story writer, and she wrote The Color Purple. There are many famous quotes from Martin Luther King, but this one was new to me. Maybe it will be for you also. It may be true that the law cannot make a man love me, but it can stop him from lynching me, and I think that's pretty important. Martin Luther King, quoted in the Financial Times. There are only two ways to live your life. One is as if nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. And that was from Albert Einstein, quoted in the Washington Post. Next, we have some snippets from Health and Science. The headline for this one is A Star That Zooms Alone Through Space. Amateur astronomers have discovered a rogue star hurtling through our galaxy at breakneck speed. J1249+36 is a hypervelocity star that has been observed traveling 1.3 million miles per hour, fast enough to potentially escape the Milky Way, astrophysicist Adam Burgasser tells Space.com. After citizen volunteers sponsored the interstellar sprinter, Burgasser, of the University of California, San Diego, and his team of researchers used the W.M. Keck Observatory in Hawaii to measure its infrared spectrum. They determined that J1249+36 belongs to the rare L subdwarf class of stars. I don't know, that's completely new to me, but they are some of the oldest stars in the galaxy and distinctive for their relatively light mass and cool temperature. But why is it streaking across the galaxy all by itself? The team has three theories. It may have once been paired with another star that went supernova, launching its neighbor like a rocket. It might have once belonged to a globular cluster centered around a pair of black holes, which can forcefully eject stars that get too close to them. Or it could be a foreign interloper spun off from one of the nearby dwarf galaxies orbiting the Milky Way. To figure out which theory is correct, researchers will next attempt to measure the chemical composition of J1249+36, the star that zooms alone through space. Boy, it's amazing what they're finding out about our universe and how vast it is. We're essentially looking for a chemical fingerprint, says University of Notre Dame physics and astronomy fellow Roman Gerasimov, a study co-author, that would pinpoint what system the star is from. So we'll wish them good luck. Now, here's one about ships and worms that can gobble up wood of ships. Once the scourge of navies, shipworms can gobble up enough wood to sink an ocean liner. They even caused a San Francisco Bay wharf to collapse in 1920. But just how these foot-long, worm-like clams can eat wood was a mystery. since their stomachs appeared to lack wood-destroying enzymes. Researchers at the University of Massachusetts Amherst analyzed shipworm intestinal tracts, focusing on the typhusole, a suborgan in the intestinal wall previously thought to help the shipworms absorb nutrients. They found that the typhusole is teeming with a specific type of bacteria which produce enzymes that digest lignin, the toughest part of the wood. So lignin is the toughest part of the wood, and these worms use that bacteria to digest it. The discovery doesn't solve the mystery of the mollusk's biology, however. Since shipworms play a role in cycling carbon, their bacteria could have potential uses in pharmaceuticals and burgeoning geoengineering technology like carbon capture. It's very satisfying, lead author Barry Goodell tells The Washington Post. We've been trying to crack this mystery for years, and we finally discovered the shipworm's hidden bacterial secret. And so that might have an impact on climate change, I think, because they talk about carbon capture in relation to pulling pollutants out of the air. There really is some amazing science being performed, and it takes some thinking to digest some of the information, but it's really interesting. Okay, next we're going to return to It Wasn't All Bad, because I like to end our segments on a positive, upbeat note. The snippets in the section It Wasn't All Bad always tell us about people doing good work, people doing nice deeds for each other, helping out themselves, helping out animals in trouble sometimes, and just generally making the world a better place. So I think it's a really nice way to end our reading of snippets from the week. So we have a story about a young man who does magnet fishing. Trevor Penny was magnet fishing in the River Cherwell in central England when he found a piece of metal that turned out to be a millennium-old Viking sword, one of only 70 or so found in Britain. Guessing it might be important, Penny contacted the authorities, who dated the sword between 850 and 975 AD. The object, covered in rust, is expected to be restored and displayed at a local museum. In prior outings for magnet fishing, essentially dredging the waterways with a magnet on a rope, Penny has found old railway tools, even a World War II grenade that required controlled detonation. With a name like Penny, I wonder if he's ever found any lucky pennies. Okay, let's go to the next one. This is about a marathon runner. Sergio Florian, a 44-year-old marathon runner, was exercising in the Pu'umanamana Mountain in Oahu when he saw a distressed dog close to the edge of a 1,000-foot cliff. The dog, dehydrated and covered in scratches, was too fragile to make it down the mountain, so after approaching her carefully, Florian transported her down the steepest part of the trail for half a mile. The dog, which weighed around 45 pounds, had been missing for 3 days after getting lost while chasing a wild pig. With the help of his wife, Diane, Florian was able to track down the owner of the dog named Stevie. I just couldn't leave another living creature in distress, Florian said. More from It Wasn't All Bad. After The Last Repair Shop won the Oscar for the Best Documentary Short Film last year, a flood of support has come in for Steve Bagmanian, an instrument repairer for the Los Angeles schools featured in the film. The fund, called the Last Repair Shop Fund, aims to increase instrument repairs and the school music programs in the city. The Los Angeles School District is one of the last in the country to offer free musical instruments to public school students. I was planning to retire, But now I'm going to build the shop back up to the level it once was and keep on going, Bogmanian said. Shania Muhammad, a 16-year-old Oklahoman third-grade teacher, became the youngest teacher in America after accepting a full-time position at Young Achievers Christian Academy. In Oklahoma City, Shania's father homeschooled her during the pandemic, and she focused on learning college-level material. At 15, she graduated from Langston University in Oklahoma with a 4.0 grade point average. And a day after graduation, she was offered a teaching position. She decided to wait until she could get her driver's license. "I refuse to be in the pickup line with my students," Shania said. That's great, isn't it? Besides teaching, she's pursuing an MBA and wants to study for a PhD. She has already published a book about her experience as a 13-year-old college student. And finally, from It Wasn't All Bad, in 1939, Emma and Gus Thompson, a black couple in Coronado, California, rented a house to the Dongs, a Chinese-American family who were struggling to find a home because of racist housing laws. The family flourished, and in 1955, they bought a house and an adjacent barn, becoming the first Chinese-American family to buy property in the city of Coronado, California. Now, after the Dong family sold the Coronado properties, they are donating $5 million to support black students at the San Diego State University. "It's just exactly what's appropriate," said Ron Dong, who donated part of the money with his younger brother, Lloyd Dong Jr. Isn't that a nice story to close out this reading of Snippets from the Week? Well, that's it for this segment of Snippets from the Week. I surely hope you've enjoyed being surprised, entertained, perhaps uplifted, or even a little inspired by all of the things that we've shared today. And if you chuckled a bit along the way, good for you. I hope you found some new ideas in what I read and some ways of approaching your life and perhaps gratitude as well.
Well, that's all the time we have for this segment of Snippets from the Week. I hope you've enjoyed being surprised, entertained, perhaps uplifted, or even a little inspired now and then. And if you chuckled a bit along the way, good for you. I'm Nina, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Take care, everyone.